If you would, take out your Bible and open up to Genesis chapter 41. Genesis 41. You may remember from last week and the weeks before of seeing, here's Joseph striving to do things according to the will of God, even if it's detrimental to him, in terms of turning down the advances of Potiphar's wife, seeing that God is with him through the difficulty times, in times if he could still show him favor, he would still bring him prosperity, and what he would do with him as being kidnapped, is the way he tells it, being sold by his brothers, by being even had these advances against him, that he would hold true to God, yet he gets thrown into prison. Yet God raises him up from the dungeon to be number two over all of the jail system under the chief jailer. And so you see how the Lord works together through these obstacles. Lord has no problem whatsoever in bringing favor upon his people while they go through difficulties. And yet it doesn't remove the difficulties. And yet you see how he provides. And you see how Joseph is reaping what he's sowing, even through these difficulties. Specifically, we've talked about in the past in Psalm 105 that it speaks of Joseph being tested through these times to refine him. And now as we've seen him go from the age of 17 up until the age of 28, which is where we finished chapter 40, and now as we get to chapter 41, he's going to be 30 years old. So to realize he's been away from home now for 13 years. He's coming up on a time where he'll have spent more time in Egypt than he did at home. But notice here, he's interpreted these dreams for the chief cupbearer, for the chief baker. It turns out exactly the way that he talked about, that the interpretation that came from God. And now, here it is. Chief cupbearer has forgotten all about him for 2 years. And you think about a two-year span of time. And I just kind of want to make a statement before we get too far, just because of a general thing that I see happen often. Do we ever superimpose or overlay things on top of stories? Things that are not truly there? I want you to just kind of walk down this path with me for a second. In the Old Testament, it talks about men like David. It speaks about Joseph. It talks about Abigail. It talks about Esther. It talks about Bathsheba. And it talks about them either being handsome or beautiful in appearance. And yet, whenever you read through the story of Ruth, what do you assume about her looks? A lot of times we think, oh, she must have been beautiful. Yet the book says nothing about her physical appearance. Not one thing. You think of the story of Saul's son, Jonathan. David's best friend. He even talks about their souls being knit together. And yet it never tells you one thing about Jonathan's appearance. Yet how do you typically think about Jonathan? We usually think about him being handsome. He is talked about being a great archer. He is talked about as being swifter even than eagles and stronger than lions and those kind of things. But so many times we just kind of superimpose details onto a story. And that's where things get really dangerous. I want you to notice how chapter 41 opens up. He says, now it happened at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh had a dream. Now, I want you to notice Joseph has been there in the prison for 2 years. Now, we would probably assume something about his attitude. Some might assume, well, maybe he's feels like he's forgotten. Maybe he feels like in terms of going, he's doing good, or maybe he's hopeless. And I want you to realize it doesn't say a word about his attitude. And so realize, don't necessarily bake in or overlay some idea here with Joseph. It just gives you these events. Now, if you notice in verse 1 again, it says, now it happened at the end of 2 full years. So it's been at least what we would say 24 months two full years, that Pharaoh had a dream. Behold, he was standing by the Nile. Now, what are Pharaoh's responsibilities in Egypt as considered by the Egyptian people? Do you know? All right. Pharaoh is considered to be the earthly son of the sun god, S-U-N, god, named Ra, R-A. And so his job as Pharaoh, the son of Ra, the earthly son of Ra, in their thinking, is to make sure that the sun shines and to make sure that the Nile River floods every year. Those are his major responsibilities as being in his position. Now, I'm not saying those things actually happened. I'm just telling you the way the Egyptian people thought. So, here's Pharaoh, and notice where is he standing in this dream? He's standing by the River Nile. This seems like this would be common, right? This is where you'd expect this to be. He says, and he was standing by the Nile, and lo, from the Nile there came up seven cows, sleek and fat, and they grazed in the marsh grass. So how do these cows look? I mean, it's like every farmer's dream, right? They look sleek, and so you start thinking through these ideas, and you go, oh, man, they look really good. Their coat's really glossy. It's really smooth. So you can almost, this is my idea of what the kids would take their animals to the county fair. Like, they've been prepped up for this. But this is not that way. He just sees them coming up out of the Nile. He says, and they're sleek and they're fat. I mean, everything is going great. This is a good time. He says, they grazed in the marsh grass, which would be right there around the Nile River. Something else to kind of tell you about an overlay that sometimes we do on purpose. The cows that you're probably thinking about are American cattle, right? You're thinking about the same kind of cows you drive down the highway and you see, or the country roads. A cow is a cow is a cow, Eric says, but he's wrong. I just want you to realize it was one of the bigger surprises I had in life, something I'll share with you here in just a moment. Look at verse 3. He says, then behold, seven other cows came up after them from the Nile, ugly and gaunt, and they stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile. And notice, all of a sudden here come these ugly cows. And I'm sure you've probably seen a few ugly cows in your life. But here's the idea, it says, and they're gaunt. What does gaunt mean to you? Thin, sickly, might even look a little diseased or something. And to go, here they are, they just don't look good. Their appearance is not good. They haven't put on any weight, which is what the farmer, the cattleman would hope for. And so you see this picture. I remember whenever I went to Nigeria and we were driving along a road. It was a paved road, or should I say a semi-paved road. And all of a sudden we were pulling up and there was just this herd of cattle that were going across the road. And of course you stop and you just wait. There's no traffic light. And I started to look through and I asked the guy that I was with, I said, what kind of animals are these? And he said, they're cows. And I thought, I've never seen cows so skinny in all my life. And he said, that's because all you're used to is American cattle. He says, they don't look that same way all around the world. And so here they were. And I mean, the cows were probably no higher than this on their back. And I couldn't guess a weight. But all of a sudden you start thinking about that and going, you think about these fat and sleek cows and you're going, oh yeah, I've seen some of those out in the field. They probably weren't that big. And the ugly ones and the gaunt ones, well, I mean, they were really, you almost feel like you could count the ribs on the rib cage kind of situation. And so here they are. And so here they are. They stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile. Does anything sound completely farce at this point? You've seen good cows. You've probably seen ugly cows. Here the picture is. They're on the Nile River. And realize the name Nile in Egyptian means the great river. They were so dependent upon the nourishment of the soil whenever it flooded every September because of the heavy monsoon rains that came down on the Egyptian highlands or the Ethiopian highlands. And then all those waters would come down and they would just wash out and they'd bring all this beautiful, fertile silt off the Ethiopian highlands and bring it down to where they were in Egypt. And it just made everything else, and it'd actually be black silt. Even the Nile River actually has even another name, it just literally means black. And so you see this picture, and so here's all these things coming together. Then, verse 4, the ugly and gaunt cows ate up the 7 sleek and fat cows. Then Pharaoh awoke. So all the things that are normal in this dream, Nile River, feeding on the marsh, good fat cows, ugly, gaunt-looking, sickly cows. All those things are normal, and the first time this dream becomes abnormal is when? When cows are eating cows, right? I mean, this would be a cattleman's worst nightmare. Like, all of a sudden, the head are eating each other. I mean, whenever you think about cows, I hope you think in terms of herbivores. And yet, to look across and go, now here are the skinny cows who are devouring the fat cows. I mean, this is kind of that part of a cattleman's nightmare of waking up from and going, I only have half as many cows, and the skinny ones ate the fat ones that were worth more. Now, here he is. Pharaoh wakes up. Doesn't say that he woke up in a hot sweat or anything. You've had some crazy dreams in your life. But here he is. Then, verse 5, he fell asleep and dreamed a second time. And behold, I hope you see the emphasis of that word. Like, whoa. He says, behold, 7 ears of grain came up on a single stalk, plump and good. Now, I know there are some translations that translate it 7 ears of corn. They don't grow maize or corn in Egypt, just to let you know, back in ancient times. You can go back and you can look at all the history that goes with it. The Hebrew word goes together with either barley or wheat. It's one or the other. So just kind of know that. So here it is. These 7 ears of grain come up on one single stalk. I mean, is that odd that you would have 7 on one stalk? He says, plump and good. And if you think about having a situation of, man, this just looks great. You know, we would probably kind of go with the American idea. If we're going to overlay it, it'd be like amber grape, waves of grain. But that's not what he's saying. So here they are. In other words, now you're over to the row crop farmers and going, man, this is great. This is great. Then, verse 6. Then behold, 7 ears thin and scorched by the east wind sprouted up after them. Notice, you're still dealing with one stalk. And now they come up, and on the same stalk, you have these fat, plump ones, and you have these others that are just scorched by the east wind. And the Arabian Desert is there. It's kind of part of the Sahara Desert, to where, man, whenever it starts whipping through, I mean, man, it gets hot. In the same way that we probably think about where we are in Missouri, whenever the weatherman starts talking about there's an Arctic blast that's coming down and it swoops down and you go, it's going to be cold. Well, for them, here's the east wind, and that meant it was going to be a scorcher. He says, and it sprouted up after them. They're thin, verse 7. The thin ears swallowed up the 7 plump and full ears. Then Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. And you go, it's not odd to have crops that look good and fat, or here the idea is plump and good. He says, it's not odd to have a year of crops that grow up and they're not as good, they're scorched and they're thin. But whenever all of a sudden vegetation starts eating vegetation, that's where this dream becomes completely abnormal, right? I mean, Anybody been driving down the highway and go, oh, look, those grains of wheat are eating each other? You go, no, because here's where it gets abnormal. And notice again, he wakes up. Pharaoh woke up, and behold, it was a dream. And I'm sure he was glad it was a dream. Then comes the next aspect, verse 8. Now in the morning, his spirit was troubled. Now here he is, troubled. He doesn't just write this off as if, just a dream, doesn't matter. It actually has an effect on his spirit. Now, have you ever woken up from a dream and you were troubled? Maybe by an event that took place in your dream, or maybe perhaps because of something you did in your dream that you go, I wouldn't do that. That's not my character. I'd make sure not to do that. And you wake up kind of troubled. Now, I want you to think just for a moment. In the New Testament, there's a couple of stories about people who are troubled. In Luke chapter 1, when Zechariah sees the angel there to the right of the altar of incense, whenever he's going in at the hour of prayer, and talks about whenever he sees him, he's troubled. He doesn't know what this means. He doesn't know if this is his last moment to live or whether this is going to go good from here. He's troubled about it. In Matthew chapter 2, whenever the Magi show up and they start asking Herod, where is the king of the Jews? Herod gets troubled. He doesn't like the idea that there being another king. And so he's troubled by it. Jesus, in John chapter 11, when he's talking the story of Lazarus has died, Mary and Martha there, they're saying, you know what, we have great faith about what you could have done if you'd have just been here. And we know that you're going to raise him up in the last, but they don't have a whole lot of faith for the present. And it talks about Jesus being troubled in spirit. Even when Jesus is going to be praying in John 13 and talking about, he says, I'm troubled. He's going to go out and pray, being troubled in spirit. And I want you to just kind of think about that idea. Look over at John chapter 14 real quick. We won't spend much time on this. John chapter 14. Look at verse 1. At the end of 13, Jesus just told him, I'm about to go away. And he's saying, where I'm going, you can't come now, but you'll follow later. And sure enough, here's where they come through. Chapter 14, verse 1. Here's Jesus' response to them, which tells you where they are. Do not let your heart be troubled. Believe in God, believe also in me. Whenever you find moments where you get troubled, you're just not quite sure how things are going to go. I'm sure you have plenty of moments like that in your life where you go, I don't know how this is going to go. I don't really know the outcome of this event. What's Jesus telling us to do? Trust him. He says, don't let your heart be troubled. Now, do you see how he says let? Which tells you, is there control over this? There is. So many times when we get troubled, we don't think that there's any way to turn it off or to soothe it. But here's Jesus telling his 11. He says, don't let your heart be troubled. Believe in God, believe also in me. He says, are you going to trust me? Now, they're going to go through a pretty rough next 24 hours. And then while Jesus is in the tomb, but going, trust me. Whenever we get troubled, that's the moment to go, I'm just going to have to trust him. And trust him is not, okay, then I'll still do what I want to do. Trust him is, and now I'm going to walk according to the way that he desires. That's how you trust him. And believe he's going to work within this what he desires. Now, there's no way Pharaoh came to that kind of thinking. He wasn't thinking that at all. Now, come back to Genesis chapter 41. So when you get to verse 8, it says, now in the morning his spirit was troubled. He needs something to put his hope in. He needs something that's firm. He doesn't have that at all. All he has is uncertainty. He has two wild and crazy dreams about cows becoming predators and vegetation being the same way. And notice his response. So he sent and called for all the magicians or soothsayers of Egypt and all its wise men. Did he hold back any resources? None whatsoever. If you were a magician or a soothsayer in Egypt, if you're considered to be wise in Egypt, all hands were on deck, is the way we would say. And they all came to Pharaoh. And I want you to notice, whenever we get troubled sometimes, isn't it interesting? We want to turn in so many different directions, don't we? And I want you to notice what Pharaoh got for it. Look at the next statement in verse 8. And Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there was no one who could interpret them to Pharaoh. What did he get for this? Nothing. And if you ever get troubled and you turn to something or someone other than the Lord, expect to find no gain. If you think about James chapter 1, it talks about, if anyone lacks wisdom, let him ask of God who gives to all generously and without reproach. He says, and it will be given to him. But if he lacks faith, he should not expect that he will receive anything from God, being double-minded. So you look at those two verses in James chapter 1, and you go, you're going to have to look at him. When? They'll fill in the blanks. No one can. It is. So you see, here they are. And that's part of a wisdom, which is interesting. They're wise enough to not say something that's not true. Because what's going to be expected then? If you make it up, what are you going to have happen? It's going to have to happen. Now, here's where it continues on. Verse 9. In the midst of all this chaos, then the chief cupbearer spoke to Pharaoh, saying, I would make mention today of my own offenses. Now, what he means by this is, I now remember something I forgot to tell you. I don't know if you've ever had those moments in life where all of a sudden somebody calls and they maybe talk to your spouse or something happens and you go, oh, yeah, I was supposed to tell you something. And I just remembered it now that it's no longer needed. Now, here he is, and the way he talks about his own offenses, he even uses the word sin, which is kind of interesting that he would use that kind of terminology. Maybe it makes you think that Joseph's effect went a little bit further than just having a conversation about a dream, but we don't know that. Verse 10, and the chief cupbearer conveys a story, which is nothing like someone who's your boss and going back in time and telling about whenever they're really furious with you. That doesn't necessarily make everything go well. Verse 10, Pharaoh was furious with his servants, and he put me in confinement in the house of the captain of the bodyguard, both me and the chief baker. It's almost as if he's saying, do you remember this? This is about 2 years ago. Verse 11, we had a dream on the same night. He and I, each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream. Now, a Hebrew youth was with us there, a servant of the captain of the bodyguard, and we related them to him, and he interpreted our dreams to us. To each one, he interpreted according to his own dream. And just as he interpreted to us, so it happened. He restored me in my office, but he hanged him. Now, here's the little curious detail. He doesn't call him by name. What's all that he remembers? He's a Hebrew youth. Now, I just want you to notice the word, how it's used. Depending on your age, you may refer to somebody who's 28 as a youth. But here is the chief cupbearer remembering Joseph as a 28-year-old and going, there's this Hebrew youth that is in prison. And he was a captain. He was served underneath the captain of the bodyguard in the prison jail. He says, we had these dreams, and he talks about him being a Hebrew. And you might be thinking, why does he call him a Hebrew? Well, if you look back at chapter 40, look at verse 14, 15, and 16. You remember the request that he made of the chief cupbearer? He says, only keep me in mind when it goes well with you, and please do me a kindness by mentioning me to Pharaoh and get me out of this house. For I was, in fact, kidnapped from the land of the Hebrews. It's interesting. He remembers the story, but doesn't call him by name. You ever have a hard time remembering people's names? Oh, please. Right? You might can tell them the details about what happened to them, but their name just... We say it's on the tip of my tongue, but it's not. Now, you notice this picture. So he remembers this detail back in chapter 41. And the one thing, and notice that the chief cupbearer was paying attention to what happened to the chief baker. He says he was hung, and he did die. And that was exactly the way that this Hebrew youth said it would happen. And you realize how God had worked these things out. In saying, it wasn't just one. Because when someone gets something like that right, what do you usually attribute that to? It's just chance, it's just coincidence. We say it's just dumb luck or something. But whenever both are right and they're exactly right on the timing and the event and the outcome, you go, wow, that's something. But the chief cupbearer was elated, I'm sure, about coming back into Pharaoh's household rather than being like a chief baker. But now he remembers. Then, verse 14. Then Pharaoh sent and called for Joseph. Now it gives his name. He says, and they hurriedly brought him out of the dungeon, which tells you, where was he? He's still in the dungeon. Still there. Seemingly still responding the same way of what we read back in chapter 40. Taking care of things, still number two on the scale of things. You notice it says, and when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came to Pharaoh. What two things did he want to do before he ever came before Pharaoh? I want to clean up, and I want to change my clothes, and then I'll go to Pharaoh. Now, I can't tell you very many times in my life where I've thought, you know, before I go, I probably ought to shave first on a moment's notice. And yet to see, here's Joseph, he knows he's going to go and stand before Pharaoh. And we'll talk about that here a little bit more here in a minute. And he changes his clothes and he comes to Pharaoh, verse 15. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have had a dream, but no one can interpret it. And think of all the people that he's appealed to. Every soothsayer, every wise man in Egypt, nothing. He says, I've asked. He says, and I have heard it said about you that you hear a dream and you can interpret it. I've heard something about you. Now, I'm pretty sure Joseph knows how. I don't think that's any secret. But notice this next statement. And think about what comes out of the mouth. It's what fills the heart. That's what it says there in Luke chapter 6. It's out of the abundance of the heart that the mouth speaks. And here he is ready for a moment like this with what fills his heart. Verse 16. Joseph then answered Pharaoh saying, it is not in me. Now, in that moment, how do you think Pharaoh felt? Oh, shouldn't have believed that, chief cupbearer. But then comes the next statement, which maybe didn't even allow him to have a thought like that. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. Who does Joseph introduce into this conversation? God. Now, he calls him by the name here in Hebrew, Elohim. It's the same word for God that begins Genesis chapter 1, verse 1. In the beginning, Elohim created the heavens and the earth. Now, do you remember what Pharaoh's role is in Egypt? He's the son, the S-O-N, of Ra, the S-U-N, lowercase G-O-D. He says Elohim, and Elohim is plural. And you understand why. God the Father and God the Spirit in the Old Testament, and of course, Jesus is there as well, the Son. But not yet mentioned. And here he points out God, Elohim, will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. He can interpret your dream. Now, if the chief cupbearer is standing there, doesn't say a word about it, has he heard something similar to this before? If you remember back in chapter 40, didn't he make a statement like in verse 8? He says, we've had a dream and there is no one to interpret it. Then Joseph said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? He says, doesn't Elohim handle these things? So here is Joseph. I mean, he just got out of the dungeon. He just got cleaned up and he's talking to Pharaoh and he says, let me introduce you to Elohim. Oh. What a moment to think, just because you've been delivered, is it time to, let's be hush-hush about this. This might cause some controversy. This might get me thrown back in prison. Joseph backing off any? He says, you need to know who's going to give this to you, and it's not me. Then, verse 17. So Pharaoh spoke to Joseph in my dream. And Pharaoh's going to give some more details in this telling that we didn't get before. He says, so Pharaoh spoke to Joseph in my dream. Behold, I was standing on the bank of the Nile, standing there. He says, and behold, seven cows, fat and sleek, came up out of the Nile and they grazed in the marsh grass. Lo, seven other cows came up after them, poor and very ugly and gaunt. And notice the extremity that Pharaoh uses now in telling the dream. He says, poor, very ungodly, and very ugly and gaunt, such as I had never seen for ugliness in all the land of Egypt. He says, these cows were so ugly, I've never seen cows this ugly before in all my life and all my land. These are the ugliest things I've ever seen. Verse 20, and the lean and ugly cows ate up the first seven fat cows. And then he gives another detail we didn't have before in verse 21. Yet when they had devoured them, it could not be detected that they had devoured them, for they were just as ugly as before. He says, these skinny cows ate these fat, sleek cows, but you couldn't tell they ate a thing. They didn't get any fatter. They didn't get any more healthy. They stayed just as ugly as they were before. He says, that doesn't make sense to me. Right? And you can understand why it troubles him. He says, then I woke. I woke up after that. Verse 22. I saw also in my dream, and behold, seven ears full and good came up on a single stalk, and lo, seven ears withered thin and scorched by the east wind sprouted up after them. And the thin ears swallowed up the seven good ears. Then I told it to the magicians or the soothsayers, but there was no one who could explain it to me. He says, I've said this so many times, you almost kind of go, is he tired of it? But he tells these details to Joseph, and then pay attention to what Joseph goes back to. Now he's heard the dream. God's the one who gives the interpretation, not Joseph. Verse 25. Now Joseph said to Pharaoh, Pharaoh's dreams are one and the same. Elohim. God has told to Pharaoh what he is about to do. Elohim is greater than you. He's about to do something in the land of Egypt. And you can't change it. Now, his role as Pharaoh is to pretend to be the divine son of a pagan god. And to be in control of things that he doesn't control, like monsoon rainfalls in Ethiopia. And to be in control of crops and that the sun rises and falls. And now here's Joseph talking to Pharaoh, to his face, clean shaven. There's no hairs to get between his lips and Pharaoh's ears. My God, Elohim, is far superior to you. He doesn't hold back, does he? He says, God has told the Pharaoh what he is about to do. Verse 26. Here's the interpretation. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good ears are 7 years. The dreams are one and the same. Verse 27. The seven lean and ugly cows that came up after them are 7 years, and the seven thin ears scorched by the east wind will be 7 years of famine. Verse 28. It is as I have spoken to Pharaoh. God, Elohim. Elohim has shown to Pharaoh what he is about to do. He says, he let you see it, even though you didn't understand it. Because you don't understand his language. And you think you're the son of God? Now, verse 29, here's the outcome. Behold, 7 years of great abundance are coming in all the land of Egypt. He says, you're going to have 7 years like you've never had before. He says, and after them, 7 years of famine will come, and all the abundance will be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine will ravage the land. So the abundance will be unknown to the land because of that subsequent famine, for it will be very severe. Now, I want you to realize what we're going to plow through in the next few chapters. Because of what God has allowed Pharaoh to know and put Joseph in place for, it's going to take Egypt from being a pretty good empire to being the greatest empire on the planet. Because this would be the same thing as if somebody was trading on the stock market and they knew what the prices were going to be in a year. It was like, well, this is easy. He says, I'm telling you what's going to happen in agriculture. Now, he says, and it's going to be very severe. Verse 32. Now, as for the repeating of the dream to Pharaoh twice, it means that the matter is determined by Elohim. And Elohim will quickly bring it about. He says, he lets you see it twice for a reason. It's set. And you don't have a choice. Because Elohim reigns over you. And he reigns over creation. And he reigns over agriculture. And he reigns, R-E-I-G-N-S, over R-A-I-N. Now, notice how this continues on. He says, this is determined by Elohim, by God. Verse 33. Not only does he interpret the dream, he goes ahead and gives some wisdom. Now let Pharaoh look for a man discerning and wise and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh take action to appoint overseers in charge of the land and let him exact a fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt in the 7 years of abundance. He says, these abundant years take 20%. Take a fifth every year and store it away. So whenever we begin year one of the famine, you have 120% already saved up. You'll be taken care of. And just imagine if they didn't know that, what would happen in Egypt? It would be gone. It'd be wiped out. Now, what they're gaining insight into is going to change not just the plight of the next 14 years. It's going to change the plight for the next 400 years. God is going to take Egypt and he's going to raise them up here in Genesis. And then whenever the book of Exodus begins, God's going to take Egypt. And by his 10 plagues, he's going to squash them on down to nothing. By God's hand, Egypt gets raised up. By God's hand, Egypt is going to get completely destroyed. So you know who Elohim is. And you see his supremacy. Then it continues on, verse 35. Then let them gather all the food of these good years that are coming and store up the grain for food in the cities under Pharaoh's authority and let them guard it. By the way, guard it. Now, you might be thinking, well, in times of abundance, is it really going to need to be guarded? Not as much as it is when it turns famine. I don't know if you ever noticed about crime. Whenever hard times come, crime usually goes up. Just a tendency. Then, verse 36, let the food become as a reserve for the land for the 7 years of famine which will occur in the land of Egypt, so that the land will not perish during the famine. He says, because otherwise, what would happen? He says, Egypt would just go away and it'd perish. Verse 37, now the proposal seemed good to Pharaoh, and catch this, and to, it doesn't just say to some of the servants, all the servants. You mean everybody was on the same page? What does that tell you about Pharaoh and his servants? How do they see what Elohim has given to Joseph? They believe him. They believe him. They say, that's a good plan. That's what we should do. Now, we may think, well, it'd be nice to know what's going to happen in 7 years. It'd be nice to know what's going to happen in 14 years. Do you want to know what's going to happen for eternity? Where you can go ahead and plan and set up your life that way? We know we do. Do you notice just because they knew the future, did that mean, okay, we don't have to do anything. We'll be fine. What do they do? We're going to put back 20%. We're going to make sure that whenever we have this reserve, we're going to make sure it's guarded. We're going to have overseers over these things in the different cities. We're going to set up these things. And you go, oh, you mean there's action to be taken just because you know what's coming? What about for us? Isn't it wonderful when you know you have eternal life in Jesus and you don't have to fear death anymore? You know that whenever the Lord comes, we're going to be raised to be like him. We're going to get to stand before God pure and holy because of what our Savior has done for us and how we responded to his words, because we know they're true and we become his servants to do his will and not our own. Now, Lord willing, next week we'll come back and we'll finish up chapter 41. All right. Have a good week.